Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yonkers Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Ria. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest. He is Huck Medica, and he is a high-level sustainability consultant. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Now, what is a high-level sustainability consultant?
It's something that came out of being a wilderness guide. So, as a wilderness guide, I learn what is enough in nature. And so when I go from there and look at how we look at sustainability, I realize we talk about sustainability in a way that it's not sufficient. And high level sustainability is really trying to look at the sufficient level of sustainability. And that is the area in which I'm consulting.
We see governments and laws that are being implemented against single-use plastic and recycling that people are doing. In your opinion, is this enough, or do we need to take it even further in order to continue to try and save our planet?
I think it's not only about saving the planet, it's really about saving our species and actually ourselves. It's not even about our children's future, it's about our own future. And yeah, what needs to change is we need to change from calling something sustainable that is only more sustainable, and also being aware that more sustainable is not sufficient. We need sustainability to survive. And when I say sustainability, sustainability as in ability to sustain, ability by our planet and ability by our own species or action.
So how can people move forward? Can you give us some examples of, say, somebody wanted you to come in and consult them on how to become more high level in sustainability in their practices? What are some of the things that you would recommend?
My favorite example is if there's a company that would make spoons and they want to work on their sustainability, and there are, you know, a number of companies that make spoons, a number of companies that sell them, and people who buy them. And when we think about what is a sustainable spoon, we can think about all kinds of materials and methods to produce them and methods to transport them and work on all these and make them more sustainable. Like lowering their footprints, ideally increasing their handprint. But the thing is, we already have more spoons than people on Earth. So we have no reason to even think about making spoons more sustainable. We just take your favorite spoon with you, and we need to just get busy with the stuff that really matters. And instead of trying to make spoons and the list of products and habits that we need to forget about is just huge. So we can make cars more sustainable. At the same time, we know that producing more cars is not beneficial for the survival of our species. And the same is in pretty much most areas that we're talking about. Is it mobility? Is it living? Is it consumption? Is it food? Like all these areas, we need to understand that high level sufficiency or high level sustainability is the name of the game, because without this efficiency, we are not much, let's say, tolerated by the rest of the natural world. So even if we're in the city, even if we feel ourselves somehow distant or decoupled from the natural realities, we cannot ignore that nature is the only place on Earth, and wherever we are, the rules apply. And that means we cannot afford using energy, resources, money, or time on anything that is not primarily beneficial for our survival and the well-being, or let's say primarily beneficial for the well-being of life and all its diversity, and through that for our survival also.
A lot of people will fancy themselves being a smart consumer and make sure that whatever product it is that they're buying, their clothing, etc., that it is better for the environment. But I don't think, as a regular person, that we actually look into the fact that every single item that we buy, even if it says it's sustainable, we're not necessarily taking into account the footprint that got it there. So where was it manufactured? How did it get to the store? Who manufactured it? So many of those things we don't know, and we aren't spending the time or resources to find out.
Yeah, and also, why was it produced? Why do we want it? Why do we need it? So a lot of things is we think about nice to have and nice to do things and activities in terms as if they were need to have or need to do. Like a toaster. Who needs a toaster? It's a nice thing. At the same time, is it helpful? Yeah, often we really cannot know the footprints, the depth of the chain. And that's also something where when you manage to, for example, take your personal overshoot day and make it disappear or move it a couple of months into the future, like life will be a lot more understandable, right? The production chain is getting shorter, right? Instead of going the detour of earning money to buy food from the supermarket, if we have a possibility to engage with some like local solidary agriculture or permaculture and maybe grow food in their own gardens or on balconies or on windows, this chain is getting a lot shorter. And that is where we avoid these efficiency losses.
We have become a very disposable society. People are quick to throw things out. People are quick to replace things. Like you said, a toaster. You have that toaster for a year, it breaks. Nobody wants to fix anything anymore. It's become a very disposable society. And I guess people don't really think beyond what they're doing in their own home. They don't think, now that I've just thrown all this stuff out and bought new to replace, where does this stuff end up?
I think the trick is to actually not only think beyond. Thinking beyond is like actually getting really difficult, because when we start to want to think beyond, then we want to understand what does it actually mean, parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. Like then we try to think to understand climate change or biodiversity loss. And these are things where I think the thinking matters much less than the feeling. If we spend more time outdoors than indoors, or more time outdoors than online, then we actually feel the effect of climate change and we experience that connections with other species that we might have in our neighborhood just disappear because their habitat is getting destroyed. So I think it's really about the feeling and connecting with not only with nature outside of us, but also with nature inside of us. And when we have this nature connection and develop this deep love for us nature, then we don't really need to understand each single footprint, right? I think the feeling is a much better driver than the rational.
You brought up biodiversity loss. Now, we do hear a lot about climate change. That's everywhere in every form of media. We're being constantly reminded about climate change. Tell me a little bit about biodiversity loss and what we're seeing today and what we can see in the future.
We see a huge, like we are in the sixth mass extinction. Going into detail this podcast will be too short for this. I just hope that listeners look it up and find out what does it mean and how much biodiversity matters for our survival and our well-being and for the well-being of the habitat that we depend on. So we see a huge loss in species. In the last 20 years, we have 70% less insects. And then you might think insect, it doesn't really matter that I don't eat insects or something, which is, by the way, not a bad idea to eat insects compared to eating, I don't know, beef or something. But here in the subarctic where I'm living, human survival without mosquitoes would not be possible. Anything small in size is usually high in number and plays a much bigger role in the whole ecosystem or food chain, if you like. We have a huge dependency and cannot afford to lose more species through our behavior. And yeah, that's also something where if we wonder what else can we do? How do we spend our time? How do we spend our holidays? It's like going into ecosystem restoration, restoring habitats, helping species to get through different kinds of winters or different kinds of summers.
There was a lot of noise being made maybe in the past few years about the fact that we weren't seeing as many bees as we did before. If you lose the bee, you lose the opportunity to grow anything, because that literally pollinates everything that is living. Is that not correct?
Yes, and not only bees, and also not only the bee, right? We need to be careful not to put all our focus on the honeybee that we have a closer connection to, because we see like we can get some honey maybe. Is really the wild bees that suffer also from a wider distribution of honeybees. So like people have started to have honeybees because they heard that we need to do something about bees, and then people became like free-time beekeepers. And then we have those honeybees replacing the wild bees. And there's all kinds of other pollinators, like the male mosquito is a pollinator. So there's a lot of insects that are pollinating that are maybe not on our list of that we are not so conscious about. And they really do matter.
Like you said, all of a sudden people are becoming beekeepers because they believe that there is a need for bees. But if we try to replace certain things, we run the risk of upsetting the balance ourselves.
Yeah, I think to some extent that's true. Like in many cases, the best thing for us to do is do nothing, right? Just leave ecosystems to their own and they will restore faster than we can look. At the same time, there's a lot of, when I think, for example, the drainage of bogs, like these trenches, they don't just fill themselves fast enough by themselves. We need the bogs to be wet again, as carbon sinks, right? Like we have some repairs we need to do and some things we just need to change. When I think about clear cuts here in the place where I'm living, clear cutting is still a habit. So is like doing nothing is one thing, but also getting the forests, like maybe even putting dead wood back into places where we took it away from to again bring habitats in. Also, yeah, when you think about the own garden and the honeybees, it's really good to build those insect hotels, just building little nooks and niches where they can actually find a place to shelter over the winter, or where they can breed, right? So I think some restoring is necessary, but as you say, we need to be careful not to do too much. Is I think the main focus, instead of like wondering what are all those things that we should be doing, is really the question, what is it that we should not be doing? And cruise ships, holiday flights, meat diet, buying new things that are not really helpful. This huge long list of things that we can easily identify and easily let go of. I think that is where at least I put my main focus, and it brings a lot of pleasure. Life is getting better when you drop all those things. It's not reducing.
I think the biggest fear that most people have is that we become comfortable with certain things in life. And your teaching is almost like the entire opposite of what the world is doing right now. Is there a middle ground? Is there a way to get where you are without scaring people, essentially?
I think that this fear of what we might be scared of is mostly imaginative. Like usually the limits or the edges of our comfort zones, they are not where we think that they are. And also we must understand that the risk of not daring change, not daring this adventure of going on the journey towards high level sustainability, not doing that is a lot more risky. It's not even any more a risk. It's just a bit suicidal. And of course, like I once crossed the Alps with a 35-kilo backpack. That was in the beginning of my hiking career. Then I went this ultra-lightweight direction and made a lighter backpack, made my own gear, bought titanium spoons. And eventually I had a 14-kilo backpack for a two-week hike in Lapland, including the food and everything. And so that was a kind of a very slow and sometimes even cold and painful journey. And this is somehow what we are doing in the moment, right? We try to shave off grams of carbon here and there, and or tons or kilos. We have a focus on carbon, which is, I think, unfortunate because it's just a symptom of climate change. Another approach is, and going back to this hiking example, I've been on a one-week survival course in that time where for 1 week we were only allowed 3 kilos. So that was really not comfortable. That was cold and hungry and weak and tired and all kinds of things. But going from these 3 kilos then to back to comfort level by adding a rain poncho of 500 grams. Or we can, where we are here, we can try to go higher on the levels of sustainability and make it slow and find out what we need to leave behind. Or we can also make a big step here, giant leap, and then see maybe we need to fall back a little bit, right? And eventually we will be faster in an area which is more sustainable. I think the big question is not what we need to do and how we need to do it. It's really the why we need to do it. And for me, after now 5 years of living off-grid without a personal overshoot day, it's the benefits. We have so much benefits of by doing this. It's not the necessity that is, I think it's a poor motivator necessity. I think the benefits and simply the sheer doability, they're much better motivators. So I get more free time. I need less money. I have more freedom. I have less paperwork. I have closer connection to my food, to my neighbors, to my area. I spend more time outside. I have better physique. I have better health. I have better connections. Life is more understandable. So all these things are there as benefits for us to just take them into our lives. And I think what you just said, yeah, that might be scary, right? Like for some people to even give up a toaster might be something that like, no, I love my toaster, right? You don't need to give up the toaster. You can build yourself a low-tech toaster that runs on solar power, right? Not even solar electricity, but directly solar. Or so it's actually this, the journey of this, the change itself, we need to make that sustainable. We cannot expect from ourselves or each other to go to these levels of sustainability that we need and that we could easily have as fast as we need them, because we have really slipped into a deep shit, right? We were born into a rotten system where we grew into habits, where we were advertised and certain behaviors were just legal and normal and the thing to do, right? And we call stuff that is really destructive as something that was part of the high society or stuff of symbols. So the journey ahead of us, it might really seem so, so long and so incredibly hard. And I think the best thing that I can share, like I cannot share what to do or how to do things, is really the why. And that is the love of life, you know, is like the joy that we have, the connection that we can get. And I can share some tools, right? How to get there, how to identify what we can do in our own lives. So a lot of the things that I have discovered for my own life, they are not scalable, right? I use a muscle power plant to charge my USB devices. I only have USB devices, that's my electric devices. And because I had like quite old third hand solar panels, they were simply not enough here in the winter. I just built this muscle power plant, like a little generator where I can just pedal and charge my devices quite easily. That is not scalable in itself because some people might not have access to use their leg, right? Then again, communication is a scalable one. Mindset shift is something that is very scalable. And as I said, tools are very scalable. And again, I mentioned the full moon full stop, hashtag full moon full stop, a very good tool that really helps to make a tailor-made, self-tailored plan month to month that moves us forward really fast. So those kind of things are scalable. And they really also take the scare out, because you have these successes. Every month you have a success that you can look at and motivate. Small steps, achievable steps, right? Choosing something that is doable yet also challenging, right? Because we really want this adventure. And it's very rewarding to look at what is actually possible.
I have to say to all of the viewers out there, if you want to get in touch with Huck and perhaps find out more of his tips and ideas to change the way that you're living, we will provide that information below this interview when it airs. I want to say thank you to Huck for joining us today.
Thank you.
You've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.